Welcome to Your Call. I'm Angie Cuero in for Rose Aguilar. Today on our One Planet series, what it means to lose what used to be massive forests of kelp along California's coast, and an inspiring effort in Fort Bragg to bring it back. Then a new ProPublica piece delineating the latest sacrifice of science by the Trump administration. On the chopping block now, National Institutes of Health funding for research into the health effects of climate change. That research will be one of multiple casualties for the NIH, which allocates billions of dollars a year for biomedical research. For that half of the show, we will need to gird ourselves with some hope, and that is going to be found in a new documentary, Sequoias of the Sea. The film is part of the 22nd Annual International Ocean Film Festival, the IOFF, produced by the San Francisco International Film Festival. Sequoias of the Sea focuses on the coast along Fort Bragg in Mendocino County. That used to be the home of huge forests of kelp reaching from the sea's floor to the surface. Kelp is known as the lungs of the ocean, trading out carbon dioxide for oxygen through photosynthesis. But kelp is also another casualty of global warming. The decay of its massive beds has been accelerated by the proliferation of a beautiful but overwhelming little beast, a purple sea urchin. Now, that population was once kept in check by a diverse ecosystem. Now it carpets the ocean floor by the tens of thousands. What's really encouraging is to see a consortium of groups traditionally at odds coming together to clear out the urchins and repopulate the kelp forests. We've got Anna Blanco online. She is the executive director of the International Ocean Film Festival and co-director of Sequoias of the Sea with Natasha Benjamin. Anna, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Well, congratulations on both the festival and the documentary, which is just, well, among other things, gorgeous to look at. So let's talk about the festival first. It's in its 22nd year, and it's featuring 30-plus films this year. Give us an overview of what's on the roster.
Well, this year we had over 200 submissions from all over the world, like we normally do. And it's just such a challenge for us to be able to select those 30 films that get screened either at Cal Theater or at our advanced screening at the Smith Raphael this coming weekend. So we have several programs. One is on deep sea exploration. There's five films in that, and it's all films about going and taking a deeper look at coral, defending the deep, what we do to help protect the deep sea. We have another program entitled The Power of One Person, you know, what one person can do to help protect our oceans. We also have our Surf Night, which is always a very popular program, preceded by a very interesting U.S. premiere of a film titled The Big Sea. We just have a variety of films that talk about different subject matter that need to be told about our ocean. So there's, like I always say, there's something for everyone. There's whales, there's surfing, there's sharks, there's everything you can imagine that you'd want to learn about the ocean.
Now, you just mentioned being at the Raphael, and some of these films are going to be screening in San Francisco. So what's the whole layout? What different areas are you in?
So this Saturday, April 5th, we're doing an advanced screening of two films. We have a great partnership with the Smith Raphael Film Center, which is where the Mill Valley Film Festival is held. And our first film is called Salmon Run by a local filmmaker, and that's at 4 p.m. And at 7 p.m., we have an amazing film about whale sharks entitled Her Shark Story. And for both of those films, the filmmakers will be present for a post-screening Q&A. And then next weekend, starting April 11th through the 13th, we have nine film programs at Cowell Theater. So that's where the main film festival takes place. There's a variety of other things that are going on, including free panel discussions. We have four panel discussions about very interesting topics about our oceans. We also have a group of what we call ocean heroes. And this is an opportunity for festival goers to learn more about other ocean-inspired organizations in the Bay Area and the great work that they are doing. So you can come, see a film, meet other ocean organizations, learn about what they're doing, sign up, volunteer if you'd like. So there's something for everyone, and there's a nice variety of opportunity to learn more about our oceans.
I like that you bring up the volunteer opportunity. I think nowadays people are looking for any way they can help improve the world a little bit.
So. Oh, most definitely. And, you know, I have to say the festival, our festival, 22 years in the making, surviving the pandemic, it's just remarkable. It's a remarkable achievement when you think about it and the amount of time and energy that goes into it. And we are a volunteer-driven organization. I probably have about 30 to 40 volunteers who have been working since last September, really, to put this festival together. So they are vital individuals, and they're fun, and we kind of have our own ocean family here. We are year-round, so we do other screenings throughout the year, and we have a traveling program where we take the films to other cities and other countries, but this is our flagship event that takes place next weekend.
Got it. Let's get to Sequoias of the Sea. That's your film about kelp loss and restoration on the North Coast. And yeah, the title is really smart because, yeah, the kelp are giant, and they do contribute to oxygen in our atmosphere in the oceans. There's a lot more in common with the trees as well. In fact, someone in your film at one point describes what's happened to kelp as the devastation of a wildfire. So there's a lot to be said about the comparison of kelp to the sequoias.
Oh, most definitely. I think that was one of the most interesting things that we learned about. And I think the film does a really good job showing the parallels between, you know, if we would have lost the amount of kelp that we've lost already on the coastline, compared that to any kind of wildfire. Wildfire is front page news. The same exact thing is happening in our oceans, but yet you can't see it. So if you can't see it, you don't really know that it's happening. And so that's the real purpose of showing Sequoias of the Sea, is to really tell about the loss of kelp. It's such an important ecosystem for thousands of species. And unless we do something to mitigate climate change, it's really hard to help the kelp come back. So yes, you don't see it, but it's just as devastating as a terrestrial wildfire.
How would you describe the before and after, being under the water, looking at the kelp? What did it look before the devastation? What does it look like now?
You know, that's a great question. You know, before, it's green, it's flowing. You can see all kinds of species swimming around. It's just gorgeous. I mean, and it grows so tall, and it creates a canopy. So when you're diving in it and swimming in it, it's just magical. It's just truly a sense of being in almost a spiritual place, if you will. Now that the kelp is gone and there's so many purple urchin, it is a purple urchin barren. And we say that all the time. And what I like to say is that it's like a carpet of purple urchins just across the entire seafloor. And it's devastating because they proliferated when we lost our sunflower sea stars. They had a wasting disease. And when that happened, they were the purple urchin were their prey. And without them, the purple urchin began to proliferate. They mowed down the kelp, and then there's no kelp. And the thing about purple urchin is that they can be dormant for a very, very, very long time. So they're just there, and it's hard to get rid of them. It's hard for the kelp to come back. So it's a real problem for us.
You know, it's ironic because if you take a look at what it looks like now and you don't know better, you might think, oh, how pretty. Look at that gorgeous carpet of purple. And it's not. It's as bad as it could get for trying to restore what it used to be. What other wildlife under the sea has been impacted by the urchins and the devastation of the kelp?
Well, you know, there's the red urchin there was a very strong red urchin commercial market, and that's been shut down. There are countless, the abalone has also been affected as well. And there's, you know, untold numbers of fish and sea life that depends on the kelp. And so it's truly, losing the kelp is like losing many, many different species. And we desperately need to bring it back.
When you talk about the devastation of the fishing industry there, I mean, we're looking at some very impressive numbers. First of all, the kelp itself, you're looking at about a 96% loss overall. And then the kelp deforestation has triggered the closure of a $44 million industry up there. You know, that includes recreation and fishing for abalone and North Coast commercial Red Sea urchin, as you just mentioned. I mean, it just goes on, and it does have that domino effect, because if there's less going on in the ocean, you'll have, you know, fewer tourists coming in, you'll have businesses that are suffering. It just, it really is a domino effect.
It definitely is. I mean, I kind of think of it as a ripple effect that it's had on ecosystems, the livelihoods of folks who work up there, who live up there, and the coastal communities and how they depend on the ocean. In the film, there's a story about one of the most popular dive shops that you would ever imagine and how they had to close, and they were closed for 4 years. But you know, they're resilient. It's a very resilient town. It's a very community-based town. And, you know, that particular dive shop has now reopened in a new location, and they're thriving. They're in Mendocino now, and it's just wonderful to see how they have rebounded and how they have are now providing resources for people to come up and doing a number of different things, including surfing and boogie boarding and all kinds of activities that they're doing along the ocean side. So there is devastation, but there's also a lot of resilience, a very resilient community coming up with a number of solutions on how to keep the community alive and keep it going and thriving. And they're doing a fantastic job.
What drew your attention to this?
You know, that's interesting. My film partner, Natasha Benjamin, and I, we've known each other for many, many years, and we were having a conversation about how many films there were about kelp in the film festival over the years. And 4 years ago, there were no kelp films. And this is how long it's taken us to bring this film to the big screen, which is pretty normal for a documentary of our size. But it's, you know, we just looked at each other and said to ourselves, you know, we need to tell this story. And she has a photography and filmmaking background. This was my first time putting myself in the shoes of a director, co-director, co-producer. And after more than a decade of watching these films, I know the value of the power of storytelling and the power of storytelling through film and the impact that it can have on people. So for me, it was like, yes, let's definitely do this. And so, you know, now here we are after 4 years, and just the opportunity to tell this story, to be behind the camera this time, is just, it just really is special for me personally. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also going to be very special for the local community of Fort Bragg, for those attending the film festival, because these are stories that need to be told, and this particular story needs to be told.
You know, and hopefully it will make a difference for the Pomo tribes along the coast. They figure into the film. Bring them into the picture for us, because their ceremonies have been affected, and they're literally coming to the coast less often.
That is correct. And I think of all the kelp films that we have shown over the years, I think we've shown about four or five kelp films, and none of them actually feature anything on the Pomo Indians. And in our film, we decided to highlight how it's impacted them, how it's impacted their ceremonies. It's impacted their ability to go fishing. They don't go for abalone. I mean, they are a part of the ocean. And yes, they tend to go less frequently than they used to in the past. Their ceremonies are definitely affected. So in our film, we showcase how they have been involved in the solutions that are being established and created. There's a wonderful story about Reef Check Foundation, which I just love, where they're teaching the tribes to go scuba diving so that they can see for themselves the loss of kelp and see the value of the ocean from, you know, in the water, below the waterline. And it's just a remarkable experience for them. They're also involved in some drone footage that's being taken, some drone surveys that are being taken of the kelp and where is the kelp coming back. So to have them in the film and to show how it's impacting them, I think is just really special for us to be able to highlight that, and obviously very special for them as well.
Well, and you've got the local tribes, you've got commercial fishermen, you've got the Nature Conservancy. These are all people who do good things and do them well, and they don't always necessarily agree on how they should be done. So we're going to swing into the reforestation of the kelp in a moment, but kind of frame this for us about how these stakeholders were able to put aside what their differences were to all focus on the same thing.
You know, I think for them, Fort Bragg is a small community. Fort Bragg has experienced loss before with the salmon, with the timber. And I think they're just such a resilient community that knows that they must depend on each other in order to find the solutions that they as a community need to have. And that's the one takeaway that I have from this film is how they came together, how they've worked together. In the film, the commercial urchin diver, Grant Downey, works very closely with Tristan McHugh of the Nature Conservancy. Another group that has really worked hard to bring everybody together is the Know Your Center for Marine Sciences. They have repurposed a shipping container and they've put the purple urchin inside the shipping container. They're feeding them and hoping to help them grow so that they can be used in restaurants. So the restaurant, there's a food element as well. And, you know, I think when a community like Fort Bragg has survived over the years in the past, I think they know how to come together to say, you know, this is upon us to help fix this problem and we have to do it together. And I think that's a big takeaway for me. And I think they've done a really good job at it.
Well, the urchins are part of it. I mean, they have to go. The urchins have to go and at least go back to the balance that used to be there in a kelp forest. They were there, but they weren't taking everything over. And the effort to bring the kelp back is about getting rid of the urchins and bringing back the kelp itself. So to the urchins, as you just alluded, one of the solutions is to eat them. And the other is to crush them, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But as far as making them a cash food crop, we've seen that with the nutrient. We've seen that with the large rodents that are along the Delta, and there's been an effort to make them a delicacy, you know, learn to make recipes with them. And you don't hear, you know, let's go out and get some sea urchin tonight. You just don't hear that. It's not part of people's consciousness as a big menu item. How does the group of people who are involved and the restaurateurs that are involved, how do they raise the profile of sea urchin as a food crop?
You know, it's you're right. I mean, it's not the first thing that comes to mind when you say, let's go eat purple urchin. What happens is that it doesn't fully develop like uni does, you know, like red urchin. It's fully developed for the purple urchin doesn't. So one of the things that they're working on is trying to figure out how to make the meat part of the purple urchin more edible. It's not fully developed, so it's going to take longer. It's challenging. One of the restaurants in the nearby town of Elk is doing just that. They're trying to fatten them up, is kind of the terminology that we all use, so that they can be used in menus and they can be used as a food source. I think Noyo Center definitely has that front and center. Let's get people to learn that they can eat purple urchin, that it's tasteful, that it's like uni, that it is uni. And I think it's going to take some time to figure out how's the best way to do that on a commercial scale. You know, how can you increase the production so that you can get as much purple urchin out of the ocean and make it a viable food source? And that's just going to take some more time and more experiments, actually. So
what does it taste like?
You know, I think it tastes really good. It does taste like uni. It's like a burst of ocean in your mouth. Mm. It's fantastic. You know, it's just not as thick and as plump and as viable as red urchin. So that's the problem. And it goes dormant for a very, very long time. But they are experimenting and we've tried it when we were in Fort Bragg. It's you just have to try it. And it's smooth, it's silky, and it just tastes like a burst of ocean in your mouth.
Mm. So eating up all the urchin isn't practical right now. There are too many. And one of the other ways of dealing with their overpopulation is smashing them. And that's a little bit divisive, whether that's the way to go about it. One member of one of the tribes is talking on camera about how that just does not work for him. So talk about smashing the urchins.
You know, there's a lot of groups up there that have been smashing the urchins for quite some time now. And they get a lot of recreational divers to go up and do it. I think, they go in and they smash them. Some of the controversy is that that might encourage them to spawn even further and create more purple urchins. So that's one problem. The other is like, how many can you actually smash when you're looking at, acres of purple urchin? How effective is that going to be? So the Waterman's or Alliance is doing a study, and where they have a certain amount of an area at Casper Beach where they are testing how smashing is having an impact on kelp. What I mean, I'm sorry, on purple urchin, whether it does in fact come back. So they're kind of leading the charge on getting recreational divers to go up and smash, and along the way they're doing a study to measure that impact, which will be helpful in terms of either seeking more funding and also being able to increase the amount of area that they're doing their study in. So there are people who are doing it. It's just compared to, it's a drop in the bucket compared to the amount of urchin that are out there. That's the
Yeah.
challenge.
Well, let's talk about the kelp itself, getting it back into the water. And the second part of that is making it resilient against the kind of things that killed it off in the first place. So let's talk about reseeding the kelp. How is that done?
That is done by taking the kelp. We were up, and one of our trips up there, we were with some of the folks from Moss Landing, and they brought in 60 kilos of kelp, and they have a contraption where they are putting it into the water, into the cove, and helping it reseed, but without it actually touching the ground. So it's kind of a long bar, and they're testing it to see if they can actually grow the kelp that way. So that if there's purple urchin on the ground, it can't actually climb up and eat the kelp. So that's one way in which they're reseeding the kelp, and it's interesting to see, and it's interesting to watch, because again, they're doing as much as they can to help bring back the kelp.
Kelp grows, what, up to 2 feet a day? That's pretty amazing.
Yes, it's incredible how fast it grows. And it's beautiful when you see it. You could be walking along the beach and you can see the kelp that's been washed up. And it's just long. And this, we're talking bull kelp here, correct? So it's got a big knob on it, and then it's got the long strand of leaves, and it's spectacular. It's just beautiful. So, underwater it's even more beautiful because it rises to the top, and from an aerial survey you can see the kelp beds that are there. And we got a lot of footage of that in the film, where you can see where there was a lot of kelp, but also where there is no kelp, where there used to be kelp. And the canopy sometimes is a good indicator of where the kelp is coming back.
Well, it's got to be resilient as well as beautiful. So how is, for example, how is it going to deal with global warming? That was part of the problem in the first place. You put the kelp back and the planet is still warming. So how do they get resilient against that?
That's a good question. I think in certain areas where they have been doing that, it's in cooler temperature. The water is much cooler, so there's more of a chance of it succeeding. I think further north in Alaska, they've had really good results with reseeding because the water's just simply colder. So for now, what's happening in Fort Bragg, to my understanding, is mostly experimental to see what they can do. But at the end of the day, it's really about the water coming back to its normal temperatures.
Which is another bigger topic, but I'm really
Exactly.
pleased you were able to bring this to us. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a story, like I said, that needs to be told, because when you can't see what's under the waterline, you just have no idea. And I think that's the most important thing that I've learned about doing this, is there's so much happening underneath our water, in our oceans around the world, that we have to learn more about, and so that we can further protect it, and keep it healthy for the next generation.
Thanks, Anna.
Thank you.
Anna Blanco co-directed Sequoias of the Sea with Natasha Benjamin. You can see it Sunday, April 13th, 4 o'clock at Cowell Theater in Fort Mason. It's part of the 22nd Annual International Ocean Film Festival, with more than 30 films. That's April 11th through 13th at the Cowl, with a preview this week in the North Bay. You can learn all about that. You don't have to write it down. Here's a place you can look for it. Look for INTL, for International Ocean Film Fest.org. INTL, Ocean Film Fest.org. We're going to take a little break here, and then we're going to switch directions. We're going to be talking about the Trump administration gutting out NIH funding of research, that research focusing on the health effects of climate change. You are always welcome to be part of our conversation by phone or email, and you can send us feedback and show ideas the same way. Our phone lines are 866-798-TALK. That translates to 866-798-8255. You can always email us to yourcall@kalw.org. On our page at the KALW website, you can find our complete archive of our shows. That's at kalw.org/yourcall. Sign up for our newsletter while you're there. Taking the promised quick break, and we'll be right back here on Your Call.